never one to go.
My parents. I remember them. Wait, what did you remember? I remember them. My mom, my dad. I have a family. They don't know where I am. Let's go.
Dory,
we have to go.
No, no. This is crazy. Where exactly are you trying to go?
To the gym of the, Baltic.
The Jewel of Morro Bay, California.
Yes.
No, Dory. California's all the way across the ocean.
Then we better get to him.
How come every time we're on the edge of this reef, one of us is trying to leave? For once, can't we just enjoy the view?
How can you be talking about the view when I remembered my family?
No, no! We've done our ocean travels. That part of our lives is over. The only reason to travel in the first place is so you don't have to travel ever again.
Give it
a Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson. And on this week's show, we're going to be talking about Finding Dory, the latest film from Pixar, the sequel to 2003's Finding Nemo. And this is going to be sort of an abbreviated show this week. We only got one review that we're doing, and I've got some stuff coming up, so this is going to be sort of a abbreviated show. So I apologize for that. It happens. I mean, there's no set time for this show, so you guys are all cool with that. But yeah, this one will be a bit of a short one. We're going to be talking about Finding Nemo, and we're going to be joined by my good friend Leslie, who I'm surprised she hasn't been on the show yet, considering she was one of my most frequent guests last time I did the show. But, you know, she's one of she's an animation expert. I love having her around when one of these movies comes up. So we're going to talk to her about Finding Dory, a movie that, I'll be honest, I was not exactly looking forward to at all. Would I? I mean, I didn't think that. It's been 13 years since Finding Nemo. And other than the Toy Story movies, I am not a big fan of Pixar sequels. I mean, Monsters University is okay, you know. It's all right. Cars 2. I actually like Cars 2 better than I like Cars, but it's still not great. I mean, so, you know, I don't really want Pixar making the last sequels. I like it when they do original stuff, like they did last year with Inside Out. And not The Good Dinosaur, which is terrible. So, you know, this is not a movie I was really looking forward to. So, I felt about it in just a few minutes when Leslie gets here. But yeah, that's kind of where I stood on Finding Dory. I don't really care about Ellen DeGeneres either. Never really found her funny. So that didn't do anything for me. Whatever. All right. So I'll talk about that. I'm not going to spoil anything. But anyway, so we're going to talk about Finding Dory. Also, I'm going to spend just a couple of minutes to talk about the sudden passing of Anton Yelchin, the actor best known from Star Trek and Only Lovers Left Alive, the Fright Night remake, so many movies, so many great movies that he was in. He's one of my favorites. See, he died tragically yesterday, or he's died yesterday. So we're going to talk about that. And just say a few words. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because it's sad, and I don't, you know, I'd rather talk about the good things he did rather than talk about, you know, how he died. So I'll keep that short, but I do want to, you know, spend a few minutes discussing my favorite some of their roles and, you know, playing a little bit from some of those films. So that will come up after the review. So, yes, this is Cinema Royale. Of course, you can follow us on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at Punchy Critic. And follow the show on iTunes and TuneIn Radio and, of course, home at Blog Talk Radio. And, you know, I've got some stuff cooking with Blog Talk. I think I may have mentioned this last week or a couple weeks ago, that there's some stuff coming down. I'm going to be looking to expand Cinema Royale in a big You guys know that I'm one of the creators of the Punch Drunk Critics website. And it's one of my many, many hats that I wear. Most of the work I do is for Punch Drunk Critics, writing reviews and also following, you know, the news stories that interest me every day. But there's a chance that, you know, we're going to expand on Cinema Royale in the coming months. Blog Talk has been very generous to us, allowing me to build and I'm going to be working on that over the next few months. So keep an eye out for that. I'll keep you up to date, of course, So keep an eye out. That could be a lot of fun. I've been trying to do this for a few years now, and this is one of the reasons why I brought the show back, was in order to do this, to sort of build a brand and a network that's not just Cinema Royale, it's other shows as well. So keep an eye out. You know, it's still in the early stages, but Blog Talk and I are discussing it. So just keep, all right, just remember that. All right, let's talk about finding pets. I'm bringing in my friend, Leslie Commamel, who I have not had on the show yet since I brought it back, amazingly. How you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing, interestingly, as you know, I'm doing well. I'm here.
Yes. You're going through some stuff right now.
Yeah. I have a broken arm is what we're talking about. But yeah, I just broke my arm yesterday. But I'm here, and, you know, I can talk about animation in any condition, I would say. So it was the perfect time to have me on.
Yeah, well, that's the, one of the main reasons why I did have you on is because we were talking about finding Dory. So I knew one person I wanted to talk to was you. So yes, finding Dory. And I was saying anything here. When I think of Finding Nemo, and it's been 13 years since Finding Nemo, which is crazy to me, but yeah, it's been 13 years. And Finding Nemo is not my favorite Pixar movie, not by a long shot. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people love it. A lot of people love Finding Nemo. It has never stuck with me the way The Incredibles did or Toy Story 3 does. It just didn't do it for me. Or even like Monsters Inc., which I love also. These movies I can watch over and over again. Finding Nemo, I take it early. It's fine, but it doesn't do anything for me. So Finding Dory, focusing on the forgetful Blue Tang, voiced by Ellen DeGeneres, someone else I'm not really a big fan of, and that make this a movie that I was necessarily looking forward to, you know? But I have to say, Pixar has won me over with Finding Dory in a way expected to. Now, the story, as you could probably imagine, deals with, as you heard in the clip, deals with Dory as she's trying to find her missing parents. You know, she suffers from short-term memory loss and played into how they got separated when she was a child. And she goes off on this big ocean-wide journey to find them, along with Marlin and Nemo, of course. And she basically ends up in a marine life facility, where she's aided by numerous other creatures. But I'm surprised by how I found this movie to be really, really funny. Now, I don't know if it has necessarily the same amount of heart as Finding Nemo does. I think it's probably leaning a little bit more towards the comedy side. But I really enjoyed this quite a bit. What did you think, Leslie?
I think it's funny you should say that it leans more to the comedy side, because to me it was like, I mean, borderlining on depressing, because it was, you know, there's times when it feels like if a small child is going to see this movie that they're going to leave the theater with separation anxiety, because there's so many moments in the movie where she's just, it's so sad, and she's, you know, struggling through trying to remember or remembering aspects of her parents. And so I think it had a lot of heart, but just very different kind of heart that Finding Nemo had. But then, you know, for me, the thing about this movie that I also think is interesting, people saying that didn't have the same kinds of memorable characters, but I completely disagree, because I love Hank. Hank, for me, and is her name? Destiny, yeah. Those two characters I just 100% loved. And then the two sea lions that are played by Idris Elba and Dominique West. I just love all those characters the reunion, exactly. And actually, as I think you know, I talked to the producer of Finding Dory, Lindsay Collins, and she talked about those two, that they actually got to record together, and that everybody wanted, like, beyond anything that anyone had ever wanted at Pixar, everyone wanted to be at that recording session. So, I loved it. I loved it for what it was. I mean, I think it's it kind of harkens back, because obviously if it's called very similarly Finding Nemo versus Finding Dory, we're going to have a lot of the same plot points, a lot of the same general themes.
But it
definitely veers in a very different direction and has there's a fun kind of zany element to it. I think with Hank, he's kind of an interesting mix of, you know, ridiculous and, you know, he's got that, he's grumpy,
right.
And then also,
right.
He
and
was,
those who don't know, Hank is an octopus, who's at the facility as well. Yeah, well, he is a septopus as Dory calls him, but yeah, he's an octopus.
Yeah, and I mean, I love that. I did not know until after I talked to Lindsay Collins that the character is based on an actual real animal. I thought it was just, you know, kind of hyperbolic that he could become just about anything. But if anybody who's listening to the show wants to go and Google a mimic octopus, they will not believe the way. Have you seen that stuff?
No.
Have you seen
it?
I knew some
types of octopus, octopi, I guess, that were capable of doing it. I've never looked for it or anything.
Well, one of the most fascinating things to me about the character is if you watch a video of a mimic octopus, they're incredibly creepy. They're creepy, kind of like oogie. I can't imagine how anyone would make something charming and winning based on that kind of a creature, because he can turn into looking like a sea snake, or he can move his body.
Pixar, you're talking about. Pixar made an entire movie about a rat.
Well, there you go. And made
it
winning,
charming.
Right?
And made
but,
it charming.
But see, we know what rats do, and we know what rats are like. But if you don't know that that mimic octopi can do all of these things where they turn themselves in, I mean, it's very... Of course, there's lots of stuff that's very unbelievable about Finding Dory, but that aspect of it where he can turn into anything, it's completely like this real creature. So I love that about it, and the amount of experimentation required to, you know, normally a character takes 6 months to develop and
right.
design fully, and this was 2 years, and they had to keep starting over. So
wow.
I think for animation geeks, and I am definitely one, it was hard for me not to be completely floored by what they were able to achieve with that character. And then
it's always amazing what they're doing when it comes to all of their characters. And one of the things that I love most about Pixar is their consistent ability to make supporting characters that you care about and would follow into other movies if they ever made them. Like, there are a bunch of them in this movie that I would love to see in more movies. Ty Burrell, who is in every single animated movie ever.
Right.
Burrell, he voices Bailey, a beluga whale who's lost his sense of location. And, you know, and there's Caitlin Olsen as his friend, a whale shark, who is nearsighted. She is always colliding into things. I would love to watch a movie just about them. I think they're fantastic. I would watch a movie about Hank as well. You know, if he had ever
right.
gotten away to Cleveland or wherever he was trying to go, and I'd love to watch a movie about him. I'd watch a movie about the sea lions voicing Tom Blake. I mean, they're all these characters, and that's not even a slight against Dory. I think Dory's a lot of fun here. In fact, Dory is part of the reason why these movies are more comedy than Nemo was, because Dory is such an inherently funny character. Yeah, she's a little bit tragic too, but she's such a funny, goofy, silly character because of her memory loss. That the movie's just a little bit funnier to me than Finding Nemo was. But
right.
there's so many characters here that I would just love to see, and Pixar just consistently blows me away with their ability to do that.
Well, it's not just Pixar, it's also Andrew Stanton, because, you know, a lot of the credit goes to him and his, you know, also the team, the animators who flesh out and develop characters. Bob Peterson, who was a part of the writing team on Finding Dory, who adds an element of quirk and kind of this weird. He has the magic touch at Pixar. He's always adding.
As long as he's making animation, he's fine.
Yeah. Yep. That's well. There you have it. But then also, what I want to mention about Finding Dory is the fact that, you know, as with all Pixar and all Disney at this point, you know, we have gotten to a point in animation history where every new feature film has a rather major leap in technology and development of new things that they can do, new ways that they can visually, you know, design backgrounds and their worlds, the way they make their worlds, and they have a new technology for Finding Dory. It's a rendering technology that was only ready like about a year into their working on the movie, and they asked them whether they wanted to use it, and they were like, I don't know, man, we've done already a fair amount. They said, we think this is going to be pretty significant help to you. And sure enough, Lindsay Collins was saying that they found what it does is it made sort of the light, the way the light hits the water, the way the light goes through the water and shadows and shapes and all of that are meant to look not more lifelike in real life, but more lifelike in terms of the context of the movie. So all of the light that they were able to use, for example, in the kelp forest, which Andrew Stanton wanted to use in the first movie, and then it just wasn't appropriate for the environment because there's no kelp forest in the Great Barrier Reef. It turns out they wouldn't have been able to do it anyway in the first movie because it was so complicated to render and to create the light under the water to make it believable. And they actually simulated every single leaf, which they could never have done 13 years ago. And so for people that haven't seen the movie yet and they want to see what kind of geeky things I point to, this is one of them. The kelp forest has layers of light. So too are certain moments right before they get to the sea world, sea life, what the heck's that thing called, the rehabilitation center. There's a lot of stuff right before that where they use a lot of the new rendering technology to make the light both on the water and under the water more believable. And people don't realize water, when you're animating it, it's the hardest thing to do in all of animation. And so there you are watching it, enjoying it, and not realizing it's a cartoon. You know, and that's the best animated features do that.
It looks amazing. And we've reached a point where you know, it's no longer acceptable to have, you know, an animated movie that doesn't look good. They all look good, you know, in different ways. You know, they all look fantastic. But Pixar has always been sort of one step ahead of everybody else. And Finding Dory, you know, is, I think, you know, one of the best looking animated movies ever done. It's such a leap beyond what they even did just last year with, you know, The Good Dinosaur, which if there was one thing that did okay, it was that it looked pretty good. It didn't do much else to that. Like, that was very good. But at least it looked good. But this one is even beyond that. So, you know, Pixar, you know, for whatever what's worth, they are amazing animators. They always seem to be a step ahead of the game. What did you think about the flashback sequences with young Dory? I thought Dory was the cutest freaking thing in the world, baby Dory. But I also found those scenes to be a little sad. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing is, if I have anything to say in terms of negative about Finding Dory, which I did love, I would say that it's a little bit sad in the way that I think a child would find it difficult because they are, you know, they're 100% in. Sometimes adults who watch cartoons are a little more able to kind of separate themselves out from it. But Pixar is so good at connecting the audience with the characters, and Andrew Stanton in his animation does very well in connecting character to the audience. And I think that that's where it gets a little dark, darker even than some aspects of other Pixar movies, but I mean, it wouldn't be Pixar if it didn't have some darkness to it. But I do love the fact that they, in their character design of the baby Dory, is they literally went into the character models for Dory and, you know, as an adult, and kind of, and then they took the mom and the dad, and then they took aspects of each of them and then sort of grafted them together to figure out what would make the cutest baby based on the character design of the two adults. So it really is a mini-me of the two parental, the parental characters, played by Eugene Levy and
Diane Keaton,
exactly.
Eugene Levy, who was also in just about every animated movie ever, always the dad. Eugene Levy is always the dad in every movie I've discovered. It doesn't matter. Searching back to American Pie, he is always a dad. You can go and check back on that. He is always a dad in every movie.
One of the things, too, that Lindsay Collins said that might have been a sort of subconscious choice on Andrew Stanton's part was that he always wanted Eugene Levy as Dory's dad. And then he wondered, kind of in retrospect, whether he had realized that for Dory to be attracted to Marlin as a friend and feel connected to him, and he's kind of neurotic, so was Eugene Levy in the character, and that maybe she saw her dad kind of subconsciously, she recognized her dad in Marlin's character, because they are a little bit similar and a little bit nervous.
They do seem a little bit similar. Yeah, you're right. And Marlin is my favorite character of these movies, by the way. One, because Albert Brooks's voice is so perfect for him. Incredible how perfect that voice casting is. But he's such an alarmist not that he doesn't have reason, but he's such an alarmist that it's always funny. He's the polar opposite of Dory, who is kind of jump right in. But then again, she's usually forgetful, so she doesn't realize that she has jumped in. But I love the Marlin character of all of these. I'm curious about whether or not there's going to be a third one now, because it does seem like, for those who don't know, there is a post-credit sequence after this. I'm not going to spoil what happens in the post-credit sequence in case anybody hasn't seen it. There is a post-credit sequence. I think it's teasing a third movie. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that takes a lot of commitment on the part of the folks at either Pixar or Disney or any animated studio to commit to another future film. And, I mean, yeah, there's money to be had when they're that successful, but I don't think they don't assume right off the bat, I don't think. But maybe they are teasing it. I would welcome it, because I love underwater sequences. I love special effects in animation, and most people who are animation geeks do as well. So there's definitely a weird little subculture of a fandom for special effects. And when I say special effects, I mean certain types of animation that are more difficult to do than others, and underwater animation definitely qualifies. So I think they definitely have an audience beyond just the fact that it's a Finding Dory, Finding Nemo, character-driven fandom. There's also people who just like animation that goes that extra distance to create a world that looks that technicolor, that color-driven, that light-driven. I mean, it's just really beautiful. Yeah. I also want to just throw out this one thing.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, I don't know if you know this, but obviously the voice of Nemo is not the same. So they actually gave the original, I think his name is Alexander Gould, the original voice of Nemo, gave him a little cameo in the movie, and I asked Lindsay Collins who it is, and it's one of the two drivers of the van going to Cleveland.
Yeah, is that name in the credits is Passenger Carl.
Passenger Carl. Okay.
yeah, he's in there. Did you hear all that talk about Finding Dory being the first Pixar movie to have a lesbian couple in it, a gay couple? Did you hear all that chatter?
No.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing. That was a thing for a while. Finding Dory, the first Pixar movie to have a gay couple. And there is, in the movie, maybe. Ellen DeGeneres has talked about it. There is a scene where a human couple scene in the movie, like a split second, and it's two women together, and they appear.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah. It kind of just flew right by me because I'm not, I don't notice that sort of thing, it, you know, being left.
But it was silly. It was silly anyway, but a lot of people were making a big deal about it for a while there until, and even after it's come out, now some people are still, now it's sort of like a debate where it's like, okay. You know, and it's like, who cares? But I was just curious if you actually saw it.
It was sort of a blink it,
you miss it sort of thing.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that. But, you know, I was so busy enjoying Hank.
Yeah. I think when Disney finally does make a movie about, with gay people in it, they'll make a bigger deal out of it than if that case of Finding Dory. I think they'll make a big deal about it, but we'll see if that ever happens. Finding Dory, I'm almost certain there'll be a sequel because this one is the highest grossing animated movie ever weekend wise.
Yep.
So you know it's I, if there's cause for there to be a third movie, that's it. $186 million worldwide in its opening weekend. That year in America, $50 million overseas, surpassing Shrek the Third, which I can't believe was number one for all that length of time. Ugh. Yuck. But anyway, I'm almost a third Finding movie. Let me figure out who gets lost this time. It's probably time for Marlin to get lost, I guess.
Oh my gosh. There's not enough Xanax in the world for that.
I know, but think how awesome it would be to
get Xanax.
An entire movie of Albert Brooks voicing Marlin. I would make me very happy.
Well, and also, you know, he's about to be, he's the, one of the voices in The Secret Life of Pets. And it's a great voice. So, you know, people are going to get a lot of him this summer and never too much. That man is super talented.
He was gone for a long time, and now that he's back and working consistently again, I'm very happy. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, Howard Brooks back.
And then I do, since there's such a big fuss about the fact that there are, you know, what's going on with women in film and not enough directors, producers, writers, stars, all of that, I just want to throw out there that this is a movie that's starring a woman, albeit a fish girl, but a woman. And co-directed, co-written by a woman and produced by a woman. So at least there are some women involved in this movie. So women who want to support films that promote women and embrace them as part of Hollywood, since we're 51% of the movie viewing audience, then they can feel confident and happy to be sitting inside a cool theater watching Finding Dory.
There you go. I know you're going to be at Comic-Con again next month. Tell people a little bit about what you're going to be doing over there, because I won't be there this year. I'm skipping it.
Oh, is it official? You're not going?
It's official. I racked my brain about it for a while. I could go, but I'm going to do this the responsible thing and not go this year. I bought tickets to a wrestling event this week, like one of the biggest ones of the year. So I will make myself feel better by attending that.
Well, there you go. We will miss you. We will definitely miss you. I have three panels.
Okay.
I can't say when they are, but I can say what they are. And actually, this is the first public place where I'm telling people about the panel. So there you go. You get a scoop. We have Cartoon Legends Speak. And that is about diversity in the animation of in the history of animation, and that has Floyd Norman is the first ever animator that was hired at Disney was black, and the first animator was black who got a screen credit, which is Ron Husband, and we have Jane Baer who started working there in the 70s, and she started her own animation studio. And we have Phil Roman, who produced The Simpsons, but also worked on all the Peanuts specials. And he's, you know, a legend in the in animation. And Willie Ito, who was instrumental in the characters of Hanna-Barbera from the Jetsons and the Flintstones. He also worked at Disney, worked on Lady and the Tramp, worked on What's Opera Doc, and he is Japanese-American and was actually in the internment camps. And so if people aren't going to Comic-Con, they can go on Cinema Siren, the YouTube channel, because we will have all the videos of all my panels on there. And then another panel I'm doing is called Cartoon Creatives, and that's a woman parent animation. It's all women. That one was great because everybody, all the studios on the networks, wanted to be part of it. So we have Lauren Faust, who's the creator of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. We have Lauren Montgomery, who's the co-executive producer of Voltron, Legendary Defenders, I think it's called.
Uh-huh.
I forget the exact title. And then we have the executive producer, I think, of Trolls, Gina Shea. We have the head of Women in Animation. She's a co-president, Marge Dean. Stevie Wormer's Skelton, she's the co-director of the holiday special for Frozen. It's a special that's based on the Frozen characters this coming this Christmas. We have the head of talent for Disney TV, Brooke Kiesling. She's on the panel. Darren Nefcy, who did Star vs. the Forces of Evil. She's the creator of that. So it's a huge panel with like not every, but a lot of the biggest names for women who are working in animation right now today. It's going to be amazing. And I'm very excited about that one. And it's just basically talking about what does it mean that there are over 70% of the people that are at CalArts and UCLA in the animation department are women. What's that going to mean for the future of animation? And what is happening inside the studios and inside the networks with women? Because it's one place where they're definitely embraced. So we're very excited about that panel. The third one is Women Rocking Hollywood, and that is women changing Hollywood from the inside, because there's a big deal about producers and directors and stars of films in Hollywood being women and not getting the kind of attention or credit or opportunities. It's a very small percentage of women who are producing and directing in blockbusters in Hollywood. And so we have the head of production at Marvel, Victoria Alonso, and we have Catherine Hardwicke, who directed Twilight, and she's got a bunch of really cool stuff that she's going to be doing in the near future. And Kathy Schulman, who is the Oscar-winning producer of Crash, but she's also the head of Women in Film LA, and she's the head of production for STX Entertainment, which I'm sure you know from Bad Moms and the new Matthew McConaughey movie. The United States of what's that movie called that he's in? They're putting that movie out. Anyway, so yeah, they're all, and then there are other people I can't announce yet that are going to be on the panel. So there's my three, and anything
nice
that people can't see, because they won't be at Comic-Con like you can watch it on my channel, on my YouTube channel, because we really want as many people to see these panels as possible. I'm very lucky that Women Rocking Hollywood is sponsored by Wattpad. That's super exciting because like 30 million people are on there a month, and they're going to promote it, and they're going to have the video on their website, and so it's just a really wonderful partnership I'm really excited about. So, yep, long time in the working, as you know. You've been hearing my planning and how things have been going for months. So I'm
well,
sorry
I'm sure those will
there
be
because you're always so supportive.
I know. Well, yeah, look, I'll be back next year, so I'll be there
absolutely
to support you next year. I need a break more than anything else. After going there, I've been there a number of years in a row now. I need a break. And there's nothing out there that's really, exciting me this year. So I was like, this is the year for me to. So that's what I'm going to do. But I'll be back next year for sure. Because I do love Comic-Con. But, I can't go every year. Can't do it. But, yeah. I look forward to, hearing about how things went and checking out your YouTube channel and seeing some of it for myself, hopefully. So yeah. Well, Leslie, this has been fantastic. I always love having you on. I will definitely have you on again soon. It was too
good. Thank you.
Of course. I will see you at a...
Now.
What'd you say?
I'm gonna go nurse my arm now.
Yeah, you go take care of your arm. Go take care of your arm.
I end with saying I was a huge fan of Anton Yeltsin, and I'm sorry that he's passed away, but we have a really wonderful collection of movies of his to look to for such a young guy. So I guess there's
Yeah, I agree.
So,
in fact, I'm going
to talk
about that. Yep, absolutely. All right. Thank you.
All right,
appreciate
it. I will talk to you later. See you soon.
All right. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye. All right. That's my friend, Leslie Conville of the Cinema Siren. I'm going to take a quick break and we'll come back. Say a few words about Anton Yeltsin, and then we're going to get out of here for the evening. So just hold on. We'll be right back.
Unforgettable, that's what you are. Unforgettable, don't you or fall. Like a song of love that clings to me, how the thought of you does never before has someone been more unforgettable.
Over the weekend, actually, just yesterday, we got the sad news that Tom Yeltsin, who most know from his role as Chekhov in this T.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, had passed away. A freak accident involving his Jeep that was in his driveway at his California home. He was pinned under after a roll back. There's no foul play, there's nothing like that. It was just an accident. Yeltsin was only 27 years old. He was born in Russia. I don't know if people know that. One of the reasons why he was perfect for the role of Chekhov, even though he doesn't have the accent, but he was born in Russia. He's been acting for a while. I think a lot of people don't really recognize how long he's been around. But his first film role came in 2000. And he starred in movies like Delivering Milo and Long Came Spider. He didn't star in them, but he had roles in them. Long Came Spider, Hearts in Atlantis, I think is when people really first started to notice him. And then he had his big breakout. The years 2006-2007. The first one was in the film Alpha Dog, which was based on a true crime story about a boy who was kidnapped, basically, and didn't seem to realize it or didn't seem to care. And he was murdered by people that he thought were kind of his friends. And that was a star-studded film at the time. It had Emile Hirsch and Justin Timberlake and Ben Foster, and I think Amber Heard and Bruce Willis. A lot of people were in that movie. Sharon Stone. And Anton Yelchin was the centerpiece. He stood out in that film. You know, that was just a breakout role. And that he quickly followed that up with Charlie Bartlett, which is I remember that movie. And it wasn't a movie that I particularly liked all that much, to be honest. But I remember it had this incredible amount of buzz. And I was like, why is this so many people, you know, talking about this movie, Charlie Bartlett? Well, one of it was the concept. You know, he played a kid who began selling, you know, pharmaceutical drugs, prescription drugs to the students at his high school, and it helped him become popular. And, you know, there were a lot of movies about prescription drugs coming out around that time. And Yelchin was fantastic in that role. In fact, here is just a little bit of, you know, I think one of the better scenes of the film featuring Yelchin from Charlie Bartlett. Here, check that out.
Charlie Bartlett.
So which one of Shakespeare's works will you be performing for us?
Actually, I thought I'd do a monologue from Corduroy Saville's masterpiece, Misadventures of a Teenage Renegade.
I guess I should tell you about the first time I had my period. My daddy was driving me back from summer camp, and I turned to him and I said, "Daddy, I think I'm sloughing."
And he said, "That's nice, honey."
And I realized that he had, like, no idea just what sloughing meant. So I explained to him that it meant blush. Was gushing from my you-know-where. And she nearly wrecked the car, trying to hand me a wad of fast food napkins, which is not something that you particularly want to stick up your hooch.
Great.
Thank you. I wasn't quite finished, actually.
No, that'll do. Thank you, Charlie.
After Charlie Bartlett, Yelchin continued to blow up. It was largely through that he got the role as Chekhov when J.J. Abrams rebooted the Star Trek franchise in 2009. And that was his role to date. Now, 2009 was, at that point, his biggest year. Not only did he win Star Trek, he also got the role of Kyle Reese in Terminator Salvation. Yes, that Terminator movie you like to pretend didn't happen. It was a big deal at the time. And he played Kyle Reese. A lot of people forget that. Let's hear a little bit of him as Chekhov. A few minutes of him as Chekhov, and I got this from YouTube, and it's pretty cool. It's Chekhov from my favorite characters out of the Star Trek movies.
Russian whiz kid, what's your name, Chanko? Chirpov?
Ensign Chekhov, Pavel Andreevich, sir.
Fine. Chekhov, Pavel Andreevich. Begin shipwide mission broadcast.
Yes, sir. Happy to. Ensign authorization code 95 Victor 2.
Authorization not recognized.
Ensign authorization code 95 Victor 2.
Access granted.
May I have your attention, please? At 2200 hours, telemetry detected an anomaly in the neutral zone, what appeared to be a lightning storm in space.
Soon after, Starfleet received a distress signal from the Vulcan High Command that their planet was experiencing seismic activity. Our mission is to assess the condition of Vulcan and assist in evacuations if necessary. We should be arriving at Vulcan within 3 minutes. Thank you for your time.
Chekhov, you have the con.
I can. Away team is entering the atmosphere, sir. 20,000 meters. 4,600 meters from the platform. Olsen is gone, sir. Captain, gravitational sensors are off the scale. If my calculations are correct, they're creating a singularity that will consume the planet.
They're creating a black hole at the center of Vulcan.
Yes, sir.
How long does the planet have?
Minutes, sir. Minutes.
Chekov, you have the con.
Aye. I can do this. I can do this. Take the con.
Aye, sir. The black hole is expanding. We won't reach minimum safe distance if we don't leave immediately.
I can do this.
Beam Earth up!
Enterprise, where are you?
Hold on.
Now, do it now!
Compensating gravitational pull and...
Based on Generada's course from Vulcan, I have projected that Nero will travel past Saturn. Like you said, we need to stay invisible to Nero or he'll destroy us. If Mr. Scott can get us to warp factor 4, and if we drop out of warp behind one of Saturn's moons, say Titan, the magnetic distortion from the planet's rings will make us invisible to Nero's sensors. From there, as long as the drill is not activated, we can beam aboard the enemy ship.
Aye, that might work.
Wait a minute, kid. How old are you?
17, sir.
Oh, good. He's 17.
He's on my mark.
All right. And, you know, and after Star Trek, Yelchin went on to star in the likes of The Beaver, which saw him paired up with Jennifer Lawrence. He did the Fright Night remake. He starred in two movies with Imogen Poots, the Fright Night remake, and the Green Room, which is an amazing film. If you haven't seen Green Room, you need to check it out. And, of course, he also did Jim Jarmusch's Only Lovers Left Alive with Tom Hiddleston and Tilda Swinton. And he also had a little role in a movie that I wish more people had seen, in a film called 5 to 7, in which he plays a young man who enters a romantic relationship with an older woman played by Barry Keoghan. For Anton Yelchin role, undoubtedly, unquestionably, is in Drake Dramus's Like Crazy, in which he stars opposite Felicity Jones. Is in that movie as well. It's twice that those two hook up. Huh, interesting. He plays, you know, a guy who's a long distance relationship with a woman, and, you know, it's and all the problems that come along with that. Obviously, it's not something that most people can do, and obviously there's difficulty in being in a relationship. And it's a movie that when I first saw it, you know, I liked it, but I kind of felt it was a little forgettable. I started watching some more afterwards and saw really how deep and resonant it was, how emotional it was, and honestly how true it was. As someone who's dealt with relationships in the past, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of moments in there that hit home. And there are some really terrific moments between Yelchin and Jones. And here's just a little bit, sort of a montage of bits from Like Crazy, just to get a taste of how good he was in that film. Alongside Felicity Jones.
Anna?
Jacob,
hi.
Didn't freak you out? I guess you wouldn't be here if it had.
No, it was nice. And it was funny. It was great.
Do you want to come up?
Cheers.
I thought I understood it. That I could grasp it, but I didn't. Only the smudgeness of it. I didn't realize it would sometimes be more than whole, but the wholeness was a rather luxurious idea, because it's the halves that halve you in half. Didn't know, don't know about the in-between bits.
like the haws that haw you and haw.
It's a bit childish.
No.
Honestly, it's just sad to see that a talent as great as his was taken away from so soon. Anton Yelchin, 27 years old. It's just tragic. On that somber note, we're gonna bring this show to a close. It ended up being not as abbreviated as I thought it was going to be. Because Leslie and I talked so much about my door, which is fine. And I spent a little bit more time on Anton Yelchin than I intended to do, which is also perfectly fine because he deserves it. He deserves the time. But next week's show, we're going to be talking about Nicholas Winding Refn's The Neon Demon. I cannot wait to talk about that one. I've got my friend Rocky Haddadi, who was a Refn enthusiast, ready to talk. I think she's seeing that movie right now, actually, which, yeah, that's going to be, I can't wait to talk to her. She's going to go nuts over that. I saw it last week, and I can't wait to talk to her either. I'm going to talk about that, and if she has bothered to see it, we'll also talk about Free State of Jones, the Civil War era movie starring Matthew McConaughey, which I just saw about, 4 or 5 hours ago, and I will do my best not to talk about. So that's Cinema Royale. I want to thank everybody for coming out and joining me on this episode. You can follow us on Facebook, of course. You can follow me on Twitter at Punchy Critic. You can find the show on Blog Talk Radio, of course. You can do it on TuneIn Radio Network, and of course on iTunes. And I'm pretty sure we're on other places, too. You can find us anywhere. And also, you can find the show on PunchyTruckCritics.com. Where I decided to go. All right? So thanks for joining me. I will talk to you soon. Goodbye.